Welcome to the Fan Experience, a Phoenix Rising supporters podcast. Stick around for interviews, analysis, fan stories, and our love affair with Phoenix Rising. And now, to kick things off, is your host, Niall McCarthy.
Phoenix Rising family, the temperatures in Phoenix will soar this week, but so will our boys. That's the hope after a disappointing 1-0 home loss to Birmingham Legion, known to their fans as Three Sparks. That was on June 4th. Back in April, we had a four-game win streak, but since then, we've only had 2 wins in 6 league games. Things are about to change for the better. Rising from the ashes never felt so real, at least not since 2018, when we had a 6-game losing streak, but went on to win the Western Conference. To be without our creative midfielder Arturo Rodriguez for the next 6 to 8 weeks, that's rough. Get well soon, Arturo. We miss you too much already. To help with the void left by Arturo, the club signed Cozy Donaciano last week. Cozy comes to us on loan from MLS side Nashville SC for the remainder of the USL Championship season. He was the 20th overall pick in the 2021 MLS Super Draft, and that's super impressive, but he only saw 27 minutes of playing time with Nashville, and that was last year in 2021. We're not the first USL club that has loaned Cozy. He spent the last few months of the 2021 season with USL Championship team Oklahoma City Energy FC. Interestingly, he didn't get any playing time with them. I'm not thrilled that we're bringing on an inexperienced and unproven player, but who knows, he might be exactly what we need in Phoenix. So, welcome to the club, Cozy. We're behind you all the way. There was another signing in the league last week. Former Phoenix Rising FC midfielder Ivan Gutierrez, he's signed with OC. Weirdly, it's only a 25-day contract, but they had him on the pitch in both of their games in Week 13. He subbed on in the 83rd minute when OC played Oakland Roots, and he subbed on in the 81st minute against New Mexico. There were a lot of interesting results in both the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference in the USL last week, and John Morrissey's weekly segment brings us up to speed on all of it. John's Twitter handle is at USL Tactics, and that's where you'll find his in-depth player and tactical analysis, as well as links to the volume of content he puts out every week. John is one of the hardest working guys covering the USL, and we're so grateful to have him with us for his weekly segment. USL was busy last week, but how about the US men's national team showing up in their pre-World Cup friendlies, and how about Wales making it to the World Cup? If it's your dream to see these two nations battle it out, well, you're in luck. It's going to happen in your lifetime. November 21st to be exact, when they face off in the very first day of the 2022 World Cup. Can't wait. I made a new friend this week. His name is Kaylor Hodges, and he's known for 2 things. Number one, he's the host of The USL Show. That's a podcast that covers all of the USL. He has vast knowledge about the USL, and every time I listen to the show, I learn a ton. The second thing he's known for is being a Birmingham Legion fan and hosting the Birmingham Legion podcast called Hammering Down Football in the Magic City. He does a fantastic job on that podcast. Definitely check it out. Taylor and I got together this week to work on a game roundup that we could post here on the Fan Experience podcast, and also that we could post on his Hammering Down Birmingham Legion podcast. We have one guest joining us, and that's Teo Mackey, a sports journalist who covers Phoenix Rising for the Arizona Republic. It's great to have Teo back on the show. So this segment, it turned out to be really interesting. Taylor made me feel much better about how Rising did when he was talking about how, as a fan of our opponent, he said that the last 10 minutes of the game were the longest 10 minutes of his life. When you hear that, it just reinforces that our boys went all out and really were a threat. At the end of the recording, Kaylor said some really nice things about this podcast that truly left me speechless. It was embarrassing that I basically didn't have anything to say, so I'll say it now. 100% of what makes this podcast is the guests that we have on. guests like Kayla himself with real in-depth knowledge of the league and who are just a joy to listen to. Guests who have stories to tell like Alex and Sarah Beth Grier, who came on this podcast to talk about having their wedding day celebrations at a Phoenix Rising game. It's been amazing to hear from the players, from the general manager Bobby Dooley, and from the head coach Rick Shantz. How amazing is it to have engaging analysts here week after week like John Morrissey and Teo Mackey and of course Kelly McCarthy. To have ESPN commentators on the show like Devin Kerr and Josh Eastern, and local guests from Los Bandidos supporters group like Nancy Shattuck and Alex, guests from Union 602 supporters group like Brian, aka The Masked Maniac, and Sarah Goldboom, so many others, too many to mention. One of the first guests on the show was Phoenix Rising's number one fan, the super fan Monica McPherson. Special shout out to Monica, who shared on social media about a bit of a health scare that she had last week. Glad to hear that you're back home, Monica, and hopefully the worst is behind you and that you live your best life every day for many, many more years. I'm looking forward to seeing Monica at the Fan Appreciation Night at the stadium next week. But before we talk about what's in store for next week, hello El Paso Locomotive, let's first get to the game roundup. Then we'll get to John Morrissey's segment about the news and results from around the league that matter to Phoenix Rising fans. And we'll round things off with a preview of next week's game against El Paso Locomotive. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
This is Greg Hurst, Phoenix Rising striker, and you're listening to The Fan Experience.
On Saturday, June 4th, Phoenix Rising hosted Birmingham Legion FC. The final score was in Birmingham's favour, 1-0. My name is Niall McCarthy. I'm co-hosting the game roundup today with Kaylor Hodges. And to add to the fun, we're joined by Teo Mackey, sports journalist who covers Phoenix Rising FC for the Arizona Republic newspaper. Kaylor, before we get to the game, let's get to know these two teams a little bit. I'll start out with a little backstory on Phoenix Rising. And if you hear anything that impresses you, Kaylor, feel free to give an ooh or an ah. The team was purchased by the new ownership group in 2017 that included internationally renowned DJ and music producer Diplo, rock star bassist Pete Wentz.
Really? Actually, I didn't know that.
And legendary Chelsea striker Didier Drogba.
Never heard of that guy.
All right, among other things, the club kicked off with a new stadium and three major signings: Guadalajara's all-time leading goal scorer, Omar Bravo, Sean Wright Phillips from Manchester City and Chelsea, and of course, famously, as we mentioned, Didier Drogba. He played his last season on the pitch with Phoenix Rising in 2018. We made the playoffs in 2017 and in every year since. We made the USL Cup final twice, and we racked up a host of honors and records, including the 2019 20-game win streak, which is a record in U.S. soccer. So in a nutshell, that is Phoenix Rising. Kaylor, over to you to tell us about Birmingham Legion.
So the Legion were initially a club founded around the Birmingham Hammers. The Hammers played in NPSL to the PDL, which is now the USL League Two. From there, we were bought out by a local ownership group, and they brought us Birmingham Legion and professional soccer to Birmingham, Alabama. That was then later rebranded to the Birmingham Legion from Hammers to Legion, which is where we get our slogan, Hammer Down. That's a nice little continuation from the past. Really, since then, from 2019 was our first year in the USL. We have made the playoffs every single year. This year, we're a little bit on the outside looking in, but things are starting to look up just a little bit. One of our more iconic parts of our branding is the crest itself. We had the anvil. We have the hammer striking down, which if you look at old videos of the Legion, we had our own forge, iron forge, that was at every single match that whenever we scored a goal, they would strike it and create a new iron ingot. And so that's where the three sparks come from as well, is because the three sparks represent the steel industry, which at one point, Birmingham was producing more steel than Pittsburgh, becoming the biggest steel city in America. Which is also where it got the nickname, the Magic City, not the same Magic City as Atlanta. That's a niche joke. Wow. And then because it sprung up overnight like a Magic City, because it's the only place in the U.S. and possibly the world where iron ore, coal, and river are all located within a 20-mile radius. So they did not have to outsource anything to create their own steel. So that's where the Legion came from, and hopefully looking to get back on track and get into the playoffs.
So you said that at the games, they would get a hammer and an anvil, and they would make what?
They would make steel ingots, like little iron ingots. They would, every time we scored, they would fire up the forge, and they would hit the forge and give us a steel ingot for every goal.
All right, what's an ingot?
An ingot is, you know, like the gold bars or like the silver bars.
Yeah.
That's what those are called, or ingots.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. And so would the player get to take that home, or was it displayed in the stadium?
If I remember correctly, it was displayed in the stadium at one point. Like, it just became an iron wall, a steel wall.
Okay. Wow. Wow. Well, you know, other clubs have different things that they do after a goal is scored, or even after a goal is conceded. I learned that recently. But after we score a goal in Phoenix, there's typically a call and response, you know, where over the PA, we'll hear the first name and the crowd will respond with the second name. And it's a pretty cool thing. Do you guys do anything like that?
We don't score enough for that. no, we really don't. There was at one point our supporters tried to have a chant, but frankly, we're still college football brain, and we're still trying to get the basics of that down. So really, it's just lots of cheering, lots of going crazy, and everybody waiting for the forge to hit, which now at the new stadium, we don't have that kind of luxury. But, you know, it's still one of those things that it's definitely at our kickoff now, every time we kick off, because they used to fire the forge again on kickoff. That's when they would do it. So you hear over the PA, they still put in the boom right on kickoff, which is really cool.
That sounds awesome. All right. Talking about kickoff, let's get into the game roundup. Teo, are you still with us?
I'm here.
Thank you, sir. Okay. Do you want to kick us off and set the scene?
Yeah. So it was pretty much a full starting 11 for Rising, right? With the notable exception being Kevin Lambert, who's out on Jamaican national team duty. So in his place, Sievert Haugli, who is typically a center back, was playing defensive midfield. And then the other absence, Arturo Rodriguez, who is out for 6 to 8 weeks. So the other two midfielders were Joey Calistri and Aiden Quinn, and the rest of the team kind of lined up as you would expect.
Right, right. Awesome. And how did you like that?
I thought it was good, right? Like I think the experimenting they did with different formations early in the year didn't work, and it's good to go back to, you know, their typical 4-3-3, try to find the rhythm in that. But they were really missing Kevin Lambert, and they just didn't have enough creativity on the field, as we'll discuss, I'm sure, as we go here.
Sure. Over to you for some opening comments, and maybe if you want to run through your lineup, Kaylor.
Yeah, so we put out what on paper is our normal formation, which is the 4-2-3-1, a Tommy Sims special. But instead, we had quite a different lineup than normal. Our backup left back was starting. Normally, Ryan James is starting there, but we had Jake Roof. Mikey Lopez, who plays literally everywhere, he was playing our defensive mid in replacement of our normal defensive midfielder and team MVP, Anderson Asedu. He is out with injury. He should be back soon, though. Zach Haravo, another guy who's been around the USL and US soccer for a while, can play just about anywhere. He played another one defensive midfielder. So those are three guys already that don't normally play. And then in our cam role, we had Enzo Martinez, who is all USL, all-time US soccer guy. But normally our good friend Bruno Lapa is right there while he is currently in Brazil getting some paperwork figured out. So in our normal formation, we had four guys, quote unquote, playing out of position, or two guys who don't even start normally becoming sub pieces for us. So this was a bit of a makeshift lineup for us, but seeing how we played, it made a lot of sense.
And how did you like that from the outset?
Obviously, I think if we were to have our full strength 11, we would want that. But all things considered, I thought it's still a really good, I guess, two lineup. It's one that when we rolled it out, I wasn't panicked, but it was like, okay, this isn't the best thing we got. But the new style that we kind of came out with, which was very much a pressing style, very much stop dribbling the ball so much. Let's do our 1-2s. Let's get our simple passes and shoot. That ended up being really, really successful and really fixed a lot of problems that Allegiant fans have been talking about for months now.
Okay. Well, jumping into the game, let's take a look at some of the momentum and the highlights from the game. I thought that Phoenix started out strong. In the 6th minute, I saw Joey Calistri close to the sideline on the right wing. He brings the ball into the Birmingham half, hits a beautiful diagonal ball to the feet of Santi Moore, who moves to within yards of the 18-yard box. Aidan Quinn is in support to his left, drawing out the defenders. Santi goes for goal, a powerful shot just wide into the side netting. The crowd roared, thinking that it was in the goal, and it was just it was pretty disappointing that it wasn't. So, Teo, maybe you had a better angle, but from my side, I thought that was in the net.
So, are you on the west side?
I am on the east side.
Yeah, so east. I can see totally how you thought it was in from the east side, because I didn't, because I knew I was right there. But if you were from the other side, it's one of those where it hits the side of the net bulges just like a goal. Right. And so you think it's in.
Right. Then moving on from that, in the 9th minute, in the 12th minute, we saw shots on goal from James Musa, a header, and Santi Moore, another attempt on goal. And then it kind of swayed the other way when we saw for Birmingham, Enzo Martinez had an attempt on goal, as did Prosper Kasim. Minutes later, Enzo Martinez had another shot on goal. So it's making for a very exciting match, and that's bringing us up to the first 20 minutes. How am I doing so far, Kaylor?
You're nailing it.
Okay. So you're as excited as I am, right?
I was surprised at the way we were playing, and I was pumped to see it. So, yeah.
Okay. So even after the 20th minute, we had two shots on goal, Greg Hurst, Santi Moore, and then it went back to the other side. We saw for Birmingham Legion in quick succession, just three attempts on goal in 3 minutes from Alex Cronango. How do you say his name?
Cronale,
okay. Zachary Harivaux. I do better with the French pronunciations. And of course, Enzo Martinez. So three shots on goal there. And so just the excitement, the back and forth of it was fantastic. In the 30th minute, Enzo Martinez has possession on the right side of the Phoenix goal. He goes down after a tackle from James Musa, calls for a penalty, but it's not given. What are your thoughts on that, Keller?
It should have been. I don't want to be biased, but he didn't get any ball. He clearly tripped Enzo up. It's tough to not see that given, but also I've seen less given. I've seen more ignored. So it is what it is.
I didn't have a great angle on that one, but from where I was, that looked like the closest thing to a penalty in the game. And then afterward, Rick Shantz was coming out and he was saying, oh, we're not getting any luck with the referees. We had three clear shouts, whatever. And I was like, the best shout of the whole game was Birmingham in the first half.
I hear you. In the 31st minute, again, Birmingham are coming on strong. In the 32nd minute, Phoenix's Babacar Anjai intercepts a buildup by Birmingham on Phoenix's left side of midfield. He gets the ball to Moore, who races forward. Phoenix have numbers. Morris centers the ball to Quinn, who's just outside the 18-yard box. It's a shot on goal. It's another deflection. We just seem to see these deflections time after time. And it's a corner, and we've had lots of corners up to this point. So, Teo, is this one of the instances that Shantz was referring to when he said in a post-match interview that we were too quick to take shots from 35, 40 yards?
Yeah, this is one of the plays that my mind went to when he said that. Yeah. It's like, I get it. I understand why they were shooting from distance. And like this one was actually a pretty decent chance. But the whole first half was just a lot of half chances, a lot of shots from 25 yards that maybe could be something. Right. But realistically, you know, you have a 5% chance of scoring a goal on them. And it's just... there wasn't a lot of creativity. Santi Moar like was very obvious. Every time he got the ball, he was trying to get onto his right foot and shoot. Aiden Quinn is a good player, but he doesn't have like the creative flair that like he's a good passer, good finisher. He's in the right places, but he doesn't have the like creative mind, I think, that Arturo Rodriguez has, which is why they play so well when they're together. Marcus Epps has been frustrating this season. I think Luis Cejas is creative, but he didn't play or he didn't start. Greg Hurst can be, but that's difficult as a striker being isolated. So you have, and then Haugli is a defensive midfielder. So in your front six, Hurst is probably your only player that's really creative. And so then you're getting all these guys shooting from distance because they couldn't work the ball into better positions.
Sure. As except a juxt-
for,
go ahead.
I'm except sorry. For a play in 4 minutes that I'm sure you're about to talk about.
As a juxtaposition to what you're talking about, those shots from distance, that was a deflection resulting in a corner. Aiden Quinn took the corner, sent it to the back post, and Sivert Haugli, who was in previously as a center back, was in as a defensive midfielder in this game, and he went up and he managed to connect with the ball, send it toward goal, but unfortunately for Phoenix, it was straight into the goalie's arms. So then that brings us right about the 35-minute mark, and we saw two chances on goal, again from Zach and again from Alex that we had just mentioned on Birmingham's side. So at this point, how are you feeling? We're 30, 35 minutes in. Kaylor, how are you feeling about your team's performance at this point?
You know, the way I was feeling was kind of different, I think, from some Legion fans, because I was loving what I was seeing out of the three Sparks. What I've learned with, you know, with Phoenix this year and years past, while this year you could call it a quote-unquote disappointing season when it comes to goal scoring, as someone who's on the outside, this is still a very dangerous offensive team. They have a lot of firepower, and the system itself is set up for goals. The thing is that I think a lot of Legion fans underestimate how good our defense actually is. And so for me, I'm like, yeah, I am more than comfortable having our back line go against whatever, as long as we're getting our chances, as long as we are taking our shots, I'm okay with it. And that's kind of where it ended up coming down to, is I was like, yeah, let's keep doing this. It's working for us and we're stopping them so far.
Great. So as I mentioned, there's 10 minutes to go in the match. It's right at the 35-minute mark. And my take is that from here to the end of the first half, Phoenix took over. Teo, I'm going to talk to you about this one. The 36th minute, we had Sivert Haugli. He was in the center of the park. He sent the ball to Marcus Epps on the right wing. Running towards the box, he beat his defender. Epps squared the ball into the path of Joey Calistri, who connected and blasted the ball towards goal. The goalie got to it. It was a deflection. Quinn got the rebound. Really nice first touch, but the ball was deflected and went out for another corner. So to me, that was the best chance that we had in the first half. Anything to say about that, Taylor?
I would just say I think it was the best chance all game. It was a really nice ball from Haugli. He had a few really nice passes. I don't think he controlled the midfield in the same way that Lambert does, so on the defensive end, kind of cleaning up and just winning balls. But he made some really nice passes, and that was one of them. Epps brought it down well. It was very composed. And then Kalistri, great run, but you want him to put that more toward a corner. It was just kind of too comfortable for the goalkeeper.
Great. From there to the end of the first half, we saw shots from Epps, Kalistri again, from Moore. I really felt like Phoenix were dominating possession and were dominating the momentum. And really, it's hats off and a shout out to the Birmingham Legion defense. We hear about defenses being stout a lot, but really, I thought that they defined stout defending last night. So anything that you want to say about how you were feeling in that last 10 minutes of the first half, Taylor?
On that, Kalistri shot, Matt Van Okkel made a brilliant stop. I mean, it was a brilliant save by the 36-year-old in his 99th appearance in the USL. He was a guy who was playing like he had his 99th appearance in the USL as well. When it comes to a stout defense, the biggest things that I noticed was Jake Roof was really good on defense. The one moment that you talked about earlier with Epps beating him, that was really his biggest mistake of the night. And that's coming from a guy who at most gets about 10 minutes a game. On the other side there, we have Alex Crenali that you mentioned earlier. That was his best showing he's had this year. He played a brilliant game, but the guy who goes really underrated here, and I will scream this from the rooftops, Fanwell Kavita is one of the best center backs in the USL. I would even argue the best one, and he doesn't have the stats that are sexy to the eye or whatever. The thing is that he's so smart and so physical, and you saw that during the match where they started moving away from him because they knew that he was going to be able to shield them away from the ball. And towards the end of the first half, you talked about it, having a stout defense. Whenever we saw a little bit, they would rotate away from him and try to take a shot away from Fanwell Kavita, which made it really easy for Matt Van Okkel to know where the shot was going.
Is he your captain, by the way?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So we're into halftime. Let's talk about our thoughts at halftime. I've just got some stats to throw out for you guys. Phoenix had 56% possession, 212 passes with 87% accuracy. Compare that to Birmingham's 166 passes with 80% accuracy. Phoenix had 15 shots on goal, 4 on target. Birmingham, 9 shots on goal, 1 shot on target. Phoenix, to me, had impressively more success in the duels, the tackles, the interceptions. And Tail, I feel that this is the game that Phoenix want to play. And Kaylor, you may also say the same thing for Birmingham. So, Tail, if our stats are that good, what's going wrong?
That was also my first reaction was, oh, the stats are good. Like, they're controlling the game. But then afterward, Rick said, yeah, the stats were good, but we had a lot of shots, but they weren't good enough shots. They weren't good enough chances. And like watching it back and thinking back on it, like, I think he's right. Like, they did control the game. They were the better team in the first half, but they still weren't creating really good chances. Like, USL doesn't have expected goals. They don't calculate it. But if they did, what would Phoenix have had in the first half? Like, most of it would have been on Kalistri's chance, which is probably like a 0.2 chance. So you're saying, okay, they probably have 0.3, 0.4 expected goals in the first half, maybe, like, as a guess. That's not very good for having 15 shots. So I can understand why Chance was not happy, despite the stats being in Phoenix's favor.
Kaylor, over to you. Were you happy with your performance in the first half?
Yeah, I mean, when you mentioned the shots versus shots on goal, that's pretty Legion ball. That's Tommy ball to a T, you know, lots of shots, not many on target. But the difference was not really the shots themselves. It was about the chances created for me. Because we see a lot of times where Legion control the ball in the final third, but they don't do anything with it. And we were actually doing something with it. So overall, I was kind of sitting there thinking, hey, this is it. This is... this is what I've been looking for. This is what I've been looking out of the three Sparks. So I was really, really stoked about this one.
Awesome. Getting into the second half, we saw the first goal in the 58th minute. It was a Birmingham goal, and we just did not see this coming. From Legion's own half, Johnny Dean, the right fullback, brought the ball to midfield. He did well to get the ball forward to Enzo Martinez, who raced toward goal. He's tackled by Phoenix's left fullback, Babacar Jai. The ball fell to Legion's Prosper Kasim on the right corner of the box. Kasim didn't hesitate. A first touch to Dyfer. He shoots, and there it is, the first goal of the match. So obviously, Kaylor, you're enraptured at this point.
Yeah, I was shocked. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I fully didn't expect to score in this match just because Ben Lunt's an incredible keeper. You know, he had another moment later that I'm sure we'll talk about, maybe anyway. But it was still one of those moments that Prosper did Prosper things. And Enzo Martinez did all the dirty work, fighting off a defender, getting the ball away, and Prosper with that beautiful, magical left boot of his managed to get into the back of the net. But yeah, you mentioned Johnny Dean. I mean, he does the thing that he does is boy runs fast, boy passes well, and it creates chances for us.
Over to you, Teo. Should the defense have done better on that one?
Yeah, it was bad positioning. I don't know if it was an intentional tactical thing or if it was just players messing up, but it seemed like maybe they were trying to play an offside trap, and then Darnell King was playing who got the ball? Enzo Martinez on. Or maybe because James Musa was in no man's land. So I don't know if it was because he was playing an offside trap or he just switched off, but he was in no man's land. Farrell, I believe it was, stepped up to make the initial. He's probably stepped up too far into a position that should have been occupied by Haugley. And so then you had Phoenix's two furthest back players on the play were two wing backs. And you don't want that because those guys are not as good at defenders as your center backs. And as you saw, Babacar Jai got turned too easily. And then Birmingham was off.
Yeah. Soon after that, in the 69th and 70th minutes, we saw two substitutions because of injury, one from each team. So from Phoenix, we saw Luis Cejas come on and James Musa go off. So we'll talk about Cejas as we progress, but James Musa going off with an injury gives us a lot of concern, Teo.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the story of the season, kind of. Phoenix has not been able to field their first 11. And the biggest thing for me is, like, they haven't been able – how many games has Kevin Lambert played in the midfield? Because when Kevin Lambert plays in the midfield, you can push the other midfielders further up. You can – it just makes the midfield tick so much better. He had to play center back for 6 weeks or whatever it was. And then he's hurt. Now he comes back for a game. He goes on international duty. And now if Moose is out, maybe Farrell will have to go back, or sorry, maybe Lambert will have to go back to center back. So I don't know. It just, hopefully it's nothing major. For the time being, how do we move back to center back with Cejas in the midfield? And I thought it worked all right.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Around the same time, there was a substitution for Birmingham. So tell us about that one. Ryan James came on and Marlon went off.
So Marlon always gets some kind of knock. That's not a knock against him in any kind of way. He is just, he puts, the way he plays is very dribble. He dribbles a lot. I mean, it looks like he's playing futsal or indoor, you know, against everybody, very much that Brazilian flair. And because of that, it leaves him susceptible to challenges and tackles that end up crunching him pretty hard. So this is a pretty normal knock for him to get. They just didn't want to push him farther than they had to. For Ryan James, he's really interesting. Coming from a Bob Lilly side with Pittsburgh, he played left back for them, but he was also their team MVP playing center midfield. So he has the ability to go from left back to the center central midfield position to a left mid. So all it did was just really give Legion a different kind of look, and later on in the game, a more defensive look that we really liked in the end.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, there were two substitutions made from injury, but just a few minutes later, there were some more tactical substitutions made. So we saw a new signing during the week, Cozy Donasiano, I think is how you'd possibly say his name. He comes in and replaces Joey Calistri, and at the same time, Ryan Flood came on for Marcus Epps. Things definitely got interesting, and I felt that Phoenix held their positions well from there on, and you know, I don't feel like the attack, I don't feel like there was any lack from the attack because of those substitutions. So there was a substitution on Birmingham's side. Eddie Horvat came on for Juan Agudelo.
Yeah, I love Eddie Horvat. I'm not shy about that. I love this dude. So Eddie Horvat is a Croatian who was playing the Slovenian second tier last year, bagging in 21 goals in like 18 matches. He's so fast. He has a good touch. One of the most, according to people in training, one of the most powerful boots they've ever seen. He comes in for Juan Agudelo, who some people were still disappointed in the way he played, but I thought it was one of his best nights he had in a Legion shirt. While he didn't get on the score sheet, seeing what he did off the ball, really creating the press, forcing some turnovers, he showed a better work rate than he had in the past. The one issue is he did have, you know, a little bit of a sitter in the 31st minute where he missed a header that you wanted him to put into the back of the net. But other than that, he had a fine night. Eddie Horvat, the way that this match was turning into, which was very much a track meet, to this point, it was a track meet. One team had possession, you know, and then the other team had possession, just back and forth. Eddie Horvat was perfect for that. One of the fastest players on the team, only slower than Johnny Dean, which is kind of saying something for me anyway. He was a great substitution to put in, especially coming up on a midweek match on Wednesday.
Fantastic. In the 79th minute, Darnell King of Phoenix Rising had an attempt on goal with a header. It was saved. And then we saw Prosper Kasim in the 81st minute for Birmingham Legion blasting the ball to goal. Big save by Phoenix's keeper, Ben Lunt. And I'm thinking that's what you were mentioning earlier, Taylor.
So there was another chance that he had where he saved it, not against the crossbar. He meant to hold on to it, but accidentally it landed just inches outside the far post. It was a bit of a howler on that one, but that save that he had where he saved it onto the post, onto the woodwork, just incredible. And the amount of times that we've seen Prosper rocket one off a crossbar, love the dude, but he's going to break a goalpost one of these days. I mean, that was a missile. The fact that Lunt was able to get to that was just so impressive.
We had a contentious moment in the 83rd minute when Santi Moore crossed a ball into the box, but it was deflected by Legion defender Johnny Dean. There were calls for a PK as the ball seemed to have hit Johnny Dean's outstretched hand. What do you think? Either of you guys, was that a legit call for a PK?
I thought it was live, but it was not. It hit, I guess we're on a podcast here, so me pointing to my body where it was, but it was like on the inside of his shoulder, on his like chest, so not a penalty. It really did look like it because his arm was outstretched. I understand why Phoenix, you know, had all the shots and everything, but no, not a penalty.
At this point, there's 10 minutes to go, and the pressure is definitely on Birmingham Legion. How are you feeling at this point, Kevin?
Longest 10 minutes of my life. I mean, I said as soon as he put 5 minutes up of stoppage, I was like, this is going to be the longest 5 minutes I've had to sit through. And it was.
Yeah. I'm just counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, at least 5 attempts on goal in the last few minutes of the game. So you guys, that ended the the match, Phoenix Rising hosting Birmingham Legion, Phoenix 0, Birmingham Legion 1. So let's talk about just the strategy and talk about just how we think each part of the field did. So Tay, you want to talk about the defenders? How did Phoenix Phoenix's defense do on the night?
I thought there were a few moments where the, as I said, on the goal, and then there were a handful of other moments where the center backs were out of position. Other than that, they were fine. I mean, Birmingham didn't, they kind of stopped Birmingham from creating a ton of chances. They had a few that we've talked about here. But yeah, I thought the defense was solid enough.
Yeah, and we've given a shout out to the Birmingham defense, but do you have, Kaylor, any more to say on that?
For Phoenix's defense was incredible. I have to agree with Dale on that. I mean, they really did really well. There was a few moments that they were out of position, but I mean, I say a little bit of credit to the other side that they were able to take advantage of those, because some of those mistakes, I think there's a lot of teams that don't take advantage and don't try to punish there. So I think there were small slip ups. I mean, overall, Phoenix defense was great. The Legion defense, I mean, wonderful. I don't know how else to say it. There was one moment at the very end of the match, and I'm going to struggle to pronounce his name, Ugly. He had a header in the third minute of added time that he just, it was supposed to be a header, but he whiffed on it, and it was a wide open goal, and it ended up trickling towards the box, and Alex Crenali was right there to clean it up, preserving the shutout. That was really the scariest moment of the match, and it happened to come at the very end, but it was dealt with. And so I felt really, really good about what the Legion backline did.
Awesome. Let's move it up to midfield. Tao, how did our midfielders do?
Yeah, this is kind of where the problem was, midfield and wingers, with the lack of creativity that Chance talked about. But I thought individually they all did fine. I thought Haugli was pretty impressive stepping into defensive midfield, but just not enough. I mean, we're talking about this XG here, and I guess they did have 1.59 XG in the match. So I don't know. Maybe the results are making it seem worse than it was. But there was only really the one chance in my mind that they really – I really felt like they should have scored. They had a few headers here and there that were blocked and stuff. So I don't know. They were okay, but not great.
So Rodriguez is obviously a big loss for us in the midfield.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see how Koze does. I imagine that he will break into the starting lineup.
Gotcha.
But I'm not. I don't know for sure.
And how about your midfield for Birmingham, Kaylor?
I don't know. It's kind of weird to think about considering the fact that we have the people we have out. Mikey Lopez, I thought, was incredible playing that defensive midfield during the run of play. Even though it was a 4-2-3-1, it was really closer to a 4-1-3-2 with Mikey Lopez playing almost like a pseudo center back playing the defensive midfield. He was incredible. Zach Caravo getting more into the attack was fun to see. Enzo Martinez was the little engine that could. He was just kind of running the show, and that's just kind of normal for him. We've almost become numb to it. I think in general, it was a good performance by Legion. I think that you could definitely see the talent of Phoenix there, and that was giving Legion a little bit of trouble. But I think what made this a really exciting match was knowing that we're getting those guys who are missing back, and that makes it even more positive, light to shine on it for me.
Right. And you mentioned Enzo Martinez, and he really did seem to be everywhere, and with almost every attempt on goal, he had a hand in it. So kudos, he's pretty phenomenal. How about your front line? Were you impressed? Would you have expected more from Prosper on the night?
Prosper, not really. I mean, he's a winger, right? It's expecting your winger to go out there and score all your goals. I mean, I guess you can almost relate to this, but it's a little bit different. I mean, Junior Flemings, right? He was a left winger. He scored all the goals everywhere he went. But you shouldn't expect your winger to score all your goals. You need to expect your strikers to go out and do it. So I was pretty pleased with what Marlon and Prosper did. both different types of players, but both really added a lot of benefit. The biggest thing that Prosper did was allow other players to get open, because you know you're going to have to man mark them, which led to a few opportunities that I wish Juan Aguidela would have taken advantage of. There was one moment, I think, in the second half where he was slid through on goal. He had a one-on-one with Ben Lunt and just turned the wrong way for the ball. That, frankly, should have been a goal if he would have simply turned his head the other direction. Frustrating. Juan Aguidela has been a bit frustrating this year. But again, this was the best night I've seen from him. If I'm giving it a grade, I'm giving him a B. It was fine. It was okay. Not great yet.
Okay. How about our front line, Teo? Are they getting a B as well?
Maybe a C. Crossing wasn't good. Moar was too predictable. He hasn't scored this season, 12 games.
It's shocking.
It almost like makes you wonder, like, last year, Solo was – the defenses were focusing so much on Solo that Moar was able to take advantage, and now defenses know what he's doing and they're ready for it, so he has to adapt. I still think he's a good player. Hurst just didn't do a ton on the night. Like, he just – most, whether that was service or his own position and stuff, he just wasn't really involved in the game that much. And Epps is just always frustrating. Right? Like, he has a few moments where he shows his pace and he shows his ability to play a final ball, and then he'll miss hit a few shots and be invisible and dribble into traffic, and you're like, this guy's just not getting the job done. I mean, I think the two wingers in all competitions have had one goal in like 2,000 minutes this year. So it hasn't been good enough.
Right. Not what we're used to, for sure. So did anybody shine for you, Teo?
I thought Haugli was good. I thought Haugli was good in the midfield.
Yeah, I agree.
He's not Kevin Lambert, and that poses problems in terms of Phoenix's shape. But he was good on his own. And Babacar enjoyed a few nice runs going forward, but as he has this season, just not good enough defensively. He's still learning the position. Lunt had a rare down game. Aiden Quinn was okay. Kalistri was okay. I guess I would say Haugli was probably Phoenix's best player.
What does he need to do better?
Who?
Haugli.
I don't think it's necessarily that he needs to do anything better. I just think it's not, he doesn't have the same skill set as Kevin Lambert. And so you're not going to replace that. And that's why it's so important to have Kevin Lambert here. But, Haugli's impressed me so far. Center back, defensive mid, I think he's been a good guy to bring in.
Great. Okay, over to you, Kaylor. Maybe man of the match?
This is a weird one for me, right? Because the actual man of the match, I think, if you look at the voting that the Legion Twitter put out, I think it was like Matt Van Okel and Prosper Kasim were the guys that they really pointed out. Enzo Martinez deserves a shout. But in a weird way, I was really, really impressed with Jake Roof playing our left back. He played all 90 plus minutes. He's a guy that the only time he started, this is the second time he started outside of U.S. Open Cup, and that was against a lower opponent in New York Red Bulls. And he went out there, only had the one mistake. He was a thorn in Phoenix's side. I mean, it was kind of fun, in a little, whatever housing kind of way, seeing Phoenix fans complain about him. Like, oh, he was his tackles and his, whatever. And it was like, that's a guy that's normally on our bench. And he made that big of an impact to be noticed by other teams. So for what he did, he was kind of my man of the match for the shift that he put in.
Well spotted. So sticking with you, your next game is hosting Memphis 901, and they're leading the Eastern Conference in the standings. So does your team's performance against Phoenix give you confidence going into this match?
Screw those guys, first off. That's our derby match, the Southern Harm Derby. We hate those guys. So the thing is that for fans, I think it gives us a lot more confidence. I hope it gives the players a lot more confidence. But this is an interesting case afterwards, though, is that the fans were going to be getting up for this one anyway. The players were going to be getting up for this one anyway. So it's not like, oh, we have confidence, let's go do it. It's, boys, this is Memphis, let's strap in, let's get these 3 points. So this one's a really different, this is an interesting thing. And I think what this one more or less gives us confidence in is our coach, Tommy Sohn. The Sohn out was getting kind of loud. There was real calls for him to be fired. People wanted him gone. I think this Phoenix result maybe doesn't give us more confidence in our match against Memphis, but it maybe buys him some more time.
Wow. He's been with you guys for a while, right?
Since year one.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. I can't imagine what it would be like without Rick Shantz. I just can't imagine it. You know, people have talked about what would it be like if we lost our favorite players, our, you know, Solomon Asante. You know, this was like a year ago, ever before there was any talk of him not re-signing with us or being invited to come back. But I was always thinking, well, players do come and go and you've got to expect that. But it would be a shocker and it would be really hard for me to have to deal with losing our coach. He's just been through so much with us, so many of the good times with us. So anyway, we're hosting El Paso in our next game. El Paso drew 1-1 with Hartford Athletic over the weekend. Teo, how are you feeling about that game?
I don't know. It's this kind of the same as all season, right? Like, it just, Rick says, you know, we need to be better every week, and that's the case. So every game until they actually show that they are the Phoenix Rising of old will be the same thing where it's like, all right, let's see it. I mean, I'm excited to see if this is the week, I guess is how I would put it. And that's how I felt all season.
Yeah, I think that a lot of games that we thought would be easy for us turned out to be nightmares. And a lot of the games that we thought would be tough ones, we, you know, like San Antonio, we came out really well. Anyway, it's always interesting. Guys, I had so much fun with you today. Kaylor, you want to take us out?
Yeah, I just wanted to, you know, hey, thank you for having me on. Thank you for doing this whole thing. This was a blast. It was great talking to you guys. And always keep listening to the Fan Experience. Honestly, the best, one of the best podcasts out there across any level of US or world soccer. So keep on listening to this.
Thank you so much. There, that's a bit too much. I didn't promise you that much money to see you, Taylor. Taylor, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. As always, enjoyed it.
This is Rick Shantz, the head coach of Phoenix Rising, and you're listening to The Fan Experience.
Next up, I'm delighted to have my friend John Morrissey here with the news and results from around the league that matter to Phoenix Rising fans. Hey, John, it's great to have you join us. What have you got for us this week?
Hey, Niall, thanks as always for having me on to round up the news. Really busy week once again. So let's start with some of those midweek games. RGV went on the road and in a wild matchup, got a 4-3 win in Atlanta. Atlanta is one of those teams that is really bad in the East, but they play this plucky kind of style. It was a fun one. Tampa drew with Tulsa, and it was the start of a trend for Tulsa, which we'll get to in a minute. Meanwhile, Oakland and Orange County played a really exciting game. It was a 3-2 win for the Roots, where they scored 2 goals in extra time. And Otar Carlson, their lone striker, became the first player in the USL this year to hit double-digit goals. So really impressive for him. Meanwhile, New York had a game against San Diego Loyal. It started at 5 p.m. Eastern on a Thursday. New York brought in, I think, 4 or 5 lonies from their MLS side. So really tough conditions for San Diego, but San Diego got a draw with 2 second-half goals. Friday night saw Colorado Springs really smack Las Vegas 3-0. And it was a rounding back into form for the Switchbacks to a certain extent after a little bit of an up and down stretch where they were getting results, but not looking that great per se. Heading into the full on Saturday results, Pittsburgh and Detroit played a really exciting 1-1 draw. The Riverhounds were the better side for sure, but Detroit was missing Antoine Halpineau, who was celebrating the birth of a child. Last week, he was the fourth player in USL history to get 35 goals and 35 assists in his career. Two Rising players are on that list, Solomon Asante and Aiden Quinn. Speaking of Asante, Indy hung four goals on Charleston in the first half, and two of those were assisted by Solomon Asante. It was part of a Manuel Arteaga hat trick that took place over the course of, I think, 13, 15 minutes. Indy gave up two goals late and ended up as a 4-3 game, but it was a really good look for the 11 in general. Speaking of high-scoring ones out east, Memphis hung five goals on Atlanta. So really high-scoring week for Atlanta, no kidding. But it was a 5-2 game. Atlanta got some nice action on offense, but this Memphis team, who's in first in the East right now, is really hard to beat. And continuing on with some midweek trends, Tulsa drew 0-0 with Miami. They've switched to a back three. Their manager, Michael Nsien, is under a bit of heat from their fan base, so interesting to see how things might shake out there. Miami firmly in a playoff spot at the moment. Then El Paso had one of the more notable weeks in the USL for off-the-pitch reasons. They sold Diego Luna, their teenage, really budding superstar, second league, their second team all-league last season in the USL, off to Real Salt Lake of MLS. Meanwhile, they debuted two more teenagers in their midfield, but they did draw with Hartford 1-1 in a fairly dominant performance that was a good bit of Corey Herzog action for Hartford to get the draw. LA continued their up and down form to beat Rio Grande 1-0. And then Oakland beat Monterey Bay 2-0. So with those results, Oakland continued a good week to move into a decent playoff spot. RGV dropped a middle, and it's kind of just havoc at the lower end of the West. New Mexico beat Orange County 2-1. New Mexico's up to third, and they haven't even lost since April 23rd. Meanwhile, the defending champs are down to second to last in the Western Conference. Now, I thought that they were going to struggle a bit when they saw Ronaldo Damas, when Eric Calvillo left, but I don't think anyone imagined this for them. Really, the headlining game of Saturday, though, came with the late kickoff. Sacramento and San Antonio faced off. And Sacramento, who now has allowed two goals in their last seven games, beat San Antonio 1-0. So Sacramento is sitting in a playoff spot with games in hand. San Antonio is still top of the table, but maybe a hint of things to come for both of these teams, where San Antonio can't keep relying on their counters and Sacramento really rounds into form. And then Sunday was just a one-game day. Tampa Bay and Louisville were delayed because the Rowdies were stuck in Dallas, Texas, trying to get home from that midweek Tulsa game. And Tampa came out and really stifled Lou City. They allowed five shots over the course of the whole game, none of which were on target. A bit of a sketchy penalty ultimately got them the 1-0 win, but it was a dominating performance overall. And as always, that's pretty much it for the USL. A busy week. Always a busy week, but I'm just excited to be here and talk about it.
And we're excited to have you on. John, thank you so much for that. I would like to have seen OC beat New Mexico, and it's just weird to see OC struggling as badly as they are. Having said that, I know we've got our own struggles in Phoenix, but we're looking to turn that around ASAP or sooner. So John, thank you again. It's great hearing from you.
Okay. This is Phoenix Rising supporter Sarah Beth.
And Alex Greyer. And you're listening to
The Fan Experience.
Phoenix Rising family, our next game is a home game against El Paso Locomotive. It's going to be on Saturday, June 11th. El Paso made it to the Western Conference Final in 2019 and in 2020. Last year in 2021, they were unbeaten at home, but they lost to Oakland Roots in the first round of the playoffs. Soon after that, they lost their head coach, Mark Lowry. He left to take up a vacancy in the Eastern Conference team in the 11, the team who has former Rising players AJ Cochran and Solomon Asante. Their new coach is an Australian. His name is John Hutchinson, or Hutch. He puts out a 4-3-3, presses high, a lot more aggressively than what we saw from Birmingham Legion last week. Before we go any deeper into this preview, I need to extend a huge thanks to John, Kaler, and Teo for being on the show, episode 51 of The Fan Experience, a Phoenix Rising Supporters podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, please spread the word by sharing this episode with a friend. It would mean the world to us. If you see us on Twitter or Facebook, give us a like and a retweet, and give us a 5-star rating on your podcasting platform. We'd really appreciate it. Now let's get back to that game preview, the game against El Paso Locomotive. Currently, El Paso are in 6th place in the standings with 21 points, just behind Phoenix Rising, who are in 5th place but also have 21 points. So far this season, in 15 games, El Paso have 6 wins, 3 draws, 6 losses. Phoenix have 13 games under their belt, 7 wins, 0 draws, and 6 losses. El Paso have a 40% win rate, not as good as Phoenix's 54% win rate. El Paso started the season out badly with 4 consecutive losses, but they've turned it around and have been rising steadily in the standings with only 1 loss in the last 9 games. That loss was to Pittsburgh Riverhounds, who sit in 4th place in the Eastern Conference. In their last game, El Paso hosted Hartford Athletic and drew 1-1. Remember, we beat Hartford 2-1 the week before, and that was in Hartford. We've played El Paso Locomotive 3 times in league play and once in a playoff game. One of those league games was in El Paso and we lost. The other 2 league games were in Phoenix and we won, first 2-1 and then 3-1. The playoff game, that was in October of 2020. It was here in Phoenix. The score was 1-0 after regular time with Jordan Schweitzer scoring the goal. We love you, Jordan. There was no goal in extra time, so we went to PKs and we won. 4 shots, 4 goals. John Baquero, Corey Whelan, Joey Farrell, and Santi Mora. Thanks, guys. So who are the players to watch out for in the El Paso roster? Well, in goal, they have the USL's all-time leader in shutouts. That's Evan Newton. Their center back is Yuma, and he's their captain, a force to be reckoned with. Richie Ryan is their holding midfielder. You'll see him work the ball to their creative midfielder, Dylan Mares, who has 5 goals this season. Their striker is Luis Solanac. He's their top goal scorer with 6 goals, although he might be out injured, not so sure. Their backup striker is Aaron Gomez, and he's got 3 goals so far this season. One player that's notably absent is their starling, Diego Luna, who signed with them as a 17-year-old last year, and from day one they talked about him having the potential to go all the way. He hasn't gone all the way, but he did great things for them, and just a few days ago he transferred to MLS side Real Salt Lake for a record USL to MLS transfer of $250,000. We're happy for Diego Luna, and we're happy that he won't be showing up against us on Saturday night. We're favourites to win this match, but being the favourite has had little bearing on how things have played out for us this season. This podcast comes out every Tuesday. Subscribe and follow to make sure you don't miss an episode. We love hearing from you, so send your questions, thoughts, and ideas to thefanexperiencefc@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @FanExperienceFC, and the invitation's always there for you to come on the show and talk Rising. We need to treat this game against El Paso like a playoff game. We can win this game, I believe, and I'll be in the stadium to celebrate when we do. Say it like you mean it. You know what I'm talking about. Ready? Together, I'll count us in. 3, 2, 1, go Rising!